You're listening to the Packernet Podcast Network.
You ready?
Showtime.
On May 3rd, summer starts with the Fall Guy.
Let's do it later.
Let's drink a spicy margarita.
Make some bad decisions.
Yes!
Audiences are falling in love with the most entertaining film of the year.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy.
Fall Guy. That's what the poster said.
See Ryan Gosling and Emily Blunt in the movie critics say exists to make you happy.
Trying to make it out?
Nope.
Because I don't either. It's not what I'm into right now.
What are you into?
Talking.
Yeah.
The Fall Guy. Only in theaters May 3rd. Rated PG-13.
It's time to talk about the Green Bay Packers. This is your Packers Update, the Daily Cheese, brought to you by Packernet.com. The Daily Cheese is a collaboration with the Packernet Podcast, produced by the Pack Daddy, Ryan Schlipp, and I am your host, J.J. Leahy. You can follow me on Twitter, at J.J. Leahy, to stay up to date on all things Packers or to submit questions. Hey, I really like talking about this little thing called Packers News, and holy smokes, there has not been any of it lately. Yeesh, it's been dry. But today, Brian Gutekunst took the stand and answered a bunch of questions. We got so much new information from the general manager, and I thought so many of the questions were really good ones. I'm going to just let you listen to almost the entirety of the press conference. I did cut out some of the slower parts and the couple of questions that were actually boring. Most of these were really good. And we can all get really excited together for the NFL draft, which is this Thursday. Be prepared for the Packers to take a player you've never heard of, because that's what they usually do. Let's get right into it. Here is Packers general manager Brian Gutekunst.
Hey, Brian, will you or have you exercised the fifth round option on Jair yet?
We haven't, Rob, but I certainly would expect us to do so.
What is your understanding of what Aaron wants and what, if anything, has or will occur to satisfy that?
I'm not going to speak for Aaron, Rob. What I will say is that you're probably referring a little bit to the contract and some other things, but that's kind of something we're working through. I think it's something that we've talked about quite a bit as we've worked through this salary cap situation, which is really kind of a two-year situation. We've looked at a lot of different things, and that's one of them.
This isn't about the draft, and I know there's no steadfast deadline to get it done, but is it important to you and the front office to give him more than one more year of guaranteed money on his deal if he wants that more long-term financial security?
Yeah, Matt, I'll just say this. First of all, I'm not going to get into contract specifics, but Aaron's our guy. He's going to be our quarterback for the foreseeable future. We're excited about, kind of the things we're going to try to accomplish here over the next couple of years. So we certainly think that, with the contract that you're kind of talking about, is something we'll work through. We're going to have to do probably a few things with different contracts as we head towards the season and through the season to make sure that our salary cap situation, not only this year, but in 2022, is square. So we're not done yet. We've done a lot to get here. We've kind of been doing things as we go, and we will continue to do that as we go.
Hey, Brian, I guess kind of picking off of Aaron's our guy, if he is your guy, why not push more guaranteed money onto next, further years? Is it because of 2022 and what his cap hit would be? I mean, is that a deterrent to doing that?
No, not at all. Again, we're going to be kind of in the same situation next year as we are this year, right? We're trying to continue to push more money out to field our team. I think we had to do a lot of things to bring guys back this year, and we'll have to do that again. So we're not done by any means yet, and we are working through that with a number of our players, including our
Jason Wilby.
Hey, Goody, how are you?
Good. How are you doing, Jason?
I'll be honest with you, I'm tired. I'm tired of an off season where, and I know you guys are streaming this live, so I don't want to use any profanity, but of people saying that the media are making stuff up. I lived through the summer of 2008, just like you did. So I'm not being disrespectful when I ask you this. We've known each other a long time. I just kind of want some straight answers. Where exactly do things stand, not contract wise, but just in general, between you and this team and your future Hall of Fame quarterback? Is there a disconnect? Is there unhappiness on either side? Because there has certainly been some intimations of that from some, and I don't think that those people are making it up. So I just want to know where you feel things stand with Aaron and you and with your organization.
Yeah, listen, Jason, I think I understand your question. I'm not really sure exactly where you're coming from. But what I will say is, like, you know, we're really excited about Aaron Rodgers and his future with the Green Bay Packers. We think, you know, he's going to be our quarterback for the foreseeable future. And I think that, you know, obviously every year there's different things you go through to kind of get to the season. And I think we're going through those right now, whether it be contractually, whether it be, you know, working with our players on other things. And that's where we are. But again, he's such a unique, different player than anyone that I've ever been around. And he affects our organization in so many different ways that, you know, you just can't value him because he's so important to what we do. So we're excited moving forward, and we'll kind of see where things go.
Can I follow up real quick on that so I can clarify then?
Sure.
I guess what I don't understand is the guy's cap number is $37.5 million. I'm not Russ, so I don't understand the cap the way you and him do. What's the upside of having a guy that you could restructure his contract right now, counting that much against your cap? What's the upside of that?
I'll say this, Jason, like, you know, and I think you know me well enough to know that I don't really get into too many details about conversations with players, contract negotiations with players. But again, like I said earlier, I think it's very important for us to work through the next 2 years to get this salary cap thing right. We will have to address many contracts over the next 4 or 5 months to kind of get under the cap for the season. And that's certainly one where we will probably address that as well.
Talking about this 2-year deal that you're working through with the salary cap, how much of that has driven your decision-making when it comes to the fact, notwithstanding what I'm sure will be a very exciting long snapper battle this training camp, but you have really eschewed bringing in guys from other programs to create competition within your franchise?
Yeah, I think, you know, obviously every year is unique, Aaron, as you know. I think, you know, this year, the way I look at it is we were able to kind of sign the number one running back on the market, the number one left tackle on the market, the number one defensive tackle on the market. So we just happened to all play for us, which is great. Kudos to Ted Thompson there, but I thought we were very active. We certainly did a lot, maybe a little bit outside of what we normally do as far as pushing money forward to kind of continue to keep this team together so we can, you know, make another run.
Hi, Brian. I know there's some protocols around who can be in the room this year with you. I'm curious, where are you going to be located and who is going to be with you in the room?
Gotcha. Yeah, we'll be back in the draft room. Obviously, last year we weren't able to do that, so it'll be nice to be back in the draft room. The way the league set it up, there was a couple choices that you could have to do it and follow the protocol. So we'll have about 18 guys in the room. We really don't have to exclude anybody. That's about the normal number of people we have in the room. You know, along with our scouts and, you know, obviously Coach and Russ, and there'll be a number of medical people in the room as well. So we'll have our normal allotment, and there'll be some protocols in place, but we're lucky enough here to have a, you know, really large draft room. So we're able to spread out and, kind of follow those protocols.
Hey, Brian, you know, I've talked to a couple of guys, you know, with players able to opt back in for 2021. And one guy said that the draft class falls off a cliff in the fifth round. Another guy said 1 through 259, it's fine. I guess, A, what do you think is of the class overall, and will you be able to actually fill a whole draft board?
Yeah, we have, and I think it's a pretty good draft overall. I will say, to your point, Bill, that certainly, like, you know, on the different areas of our room in the draft room where we keep different names, there's just less. Specifically, I think it's going to affect us a little bit in the undrafted free agent market. There's just a smaller pool of players maybe than there have been in the past. It'll be interesting going into next year to see how that changes next year's draft, and if that's significantly larger or what. We'll kind of see how that goes. But we kind of anticipated this a little bit, and kind of I think our roster sits, you know, just above 70 right now, which is much higher than we've ever been before. So I think as we go into this, we'll be a little more selective, certainly in the undrafted free agent market.
Regarding that, thanks for doing this. I'm just wondering, regarding that notion about that there's the overall draft class maybe not being what it's been in previous years in terms of the depth, how might that impact the trade markets, particularly the second and third days of the draft? Will there be more teams maybe trying to trade to get add picks late in future draft years, do you think? Or
yeah, I could see that. That's not always the easiest thing to do, and there's not a ton of those kind of day three trades for future picks. But I could see some people trying to acquire, you know, 2022 picks, just because they feel like maybe their board isn't as strong. But I don't think that'll be us. I think the way we look right now with the numbers, we kind of feel that our board is significantly strong, you know, basically at the top, as well through the bottom. So we feel pretty good about it.
In such a weird year, especially with this draft, not being able to see them at the combine, what position do you see as being the deepest in this year's draft?
That's a good question. I don't know if I see one particular, you know, that's the deepest. You know, I thought there was, you know, pretty good depth at the offensive line group. You know, there's some good players in the secondary. I like that depth there. But I didn't think there was one overwhelmingly deep position like some years there have been.
Hey, Brian, with the new defensive coordinator and Joe Barry in your corner, how much do you involve him in the process to ensure his vision aligns with what you and your scouts are doing and trying to find an ideal fit with the team?
Yeah, no, I think it's those things are vitally important, and those conversations, especially between Matt and I, happen a lot as we go through this process. You know, we've always strived here to try to acquire as many versatile players that could fit any system, because things do change and everything is so multiple now that you have to have guys that can do a lot of things, specifically with injuries and stuff. I think if you get too scheme specific, you can get in a bad spot as the season wears along. So, but I do think those conversations are very important. And again, I'm excited about Joe and what he's going to bring to the table. And I think he likes our group, and we'll certainly try to add to it this weekend.
Hey, Brian, this kind of goes along with what Nags was asking a little while ago. You guys have had a pretty well-established history of not drafting shorter guys. I'm just kind of wondering why that is. There's obviously been quite a few receivers or corners who've made it at, you know, that 5'9"-ish range.
Yeah, I think it's because Ron and Ted pounded into all of our brains that we're being trained that wasn't allowed. No, and also I think I do think that, like, you have to kind of decide kind of what football team and how you want to look and how you want to be. And I think up here in Green Bay and our weather conditions and stuff, that we've always tended to lean around bigger, more physical players. You know, if you're playing in a dome or down south, those guys that are smaller, quicker with speed, I think that lasts during the season a little bit longer than if you're up here, and the durability factors. So I think that's part of it. I know that all of us that were trained under Ron and Ted, you know, that's a hard thing to get over. But I do think if the right player is there, you know, Jair was very, very close to our Mendoza line, which sometimes drops a little bit depending on how good of a player you are. So we certainly will consider those players, but I do think that, which is kind of part of the way we're all trained.
How much of a wild card is your draft class from last year? You got a taste of a few of the guys, just a little bit. And when you're doing your offseason assessments, how do they play into that, and how do you think that might affect your draft this year?
Yeah, I thought the guys last year that had opportunities last year really did well in what was presented to them. I think the interesting thing, you know, we've been very healthy the last 2 years that we haven't had to really press a lot of the younger guys into duty. So, but when they did, whether it was, you know, Johnny Runyon early on and through the year, or whether it was DeGuara right at the start of the season before he got injured, certainly A.J. Dillon, when he got his opportunity to shine, he did so. But, you know, Vernon Scott, I mean, there's a bunch of guys, even some undrafted guys. Henry Black did some really, really good things, and Chris Barnes. So, yeah, no, I think, you know, we've talked a lot about here about the progression that it takes to become an NFL player, and that jump between year two, you know, one and two, and year two and three is really important. I think the thing that I like best about last year's class is really the people. I mean, they are workers. They're humble, unselfish teammates. And I think, you know, all those guys got pretty bright futures.
We all have smartphones, and we all know they're pretty amazing, but they also can be amazingly distracting, especially when we're around other people. So U.S. Cellular wants us to reset our relationship with our phones by putting down our phones for five. That's right, a company that sells phones wants us to put down our phones. And to see what we find, learn more at uscellular.com/builtforus.
Get ready for the greatest roast of all time, the Roast of Tom Brady, a Netflix live event happening May 5th. hosted by Kevin Hart. The 7-time world champion gets his cleats held to the fire by famous friends and frenemies on an unforgettable night where everything is fair game. Tune in on May 5th at 5 p.m. Pacific time for The Roast of Tom Brady, live only on Netflix.
So there's been a lot of talk already about your cap situation here this year and next year. We know drafts are as much about the future as they are about the present, but maybe is this one more so given the situation you're in with all these contracts coming up that are big, big money, that you need a lot of players that are cost control for a while that can contribute? So I guess if we look at this 2021 draft through the lens of 2022, would that be fair?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, obviously, you know, you guys know around here how important the draft is to our process and what it means. We certainly believed in the draft and develop and you know, developing players to become, you know, future stars here. So it's very, very important. I think this year is probably not a lot different than any other. I think the situation we find ourselves in maybe differently than we have in the past here is just that we've kind of really pushed out some money into future years because we realize the opportunity that is before us. You know what I mean? You know, we're a really good football team. We've been knocking on the door for 2 years and we'd like to finish that.
You know, the lack of the combine with the medicals, there just seems to be a whole lot of guys with medical questions coming into this draft. How apprehensive does that make you?
Yeah, it's tough. I will say, you know, we have an excellent medical staff with Flea and Dr. McKenzie who put a lot of time in to these prospects. They've been probably challenged more this year than any other just because of us not having a traditional combine. But I have a lot of faith in those guys. And I think, you know, every year there's risk with all these guys, you know, medically, and it's a little bit of a, you know, kind of an educated guess more than anything, but I have a lot of confidence in those guys and the information they provide me with to make those decisions. But you always have a little apprehension. And this year, I think specifically with some guys, maybe on that third day, you're going to have less information than you've had in the past.
Brian, you have 10 picks and you mentioned how close you guys have been to the Super Bowl the last couple of years. How tempting is it at some point to go up and get a guy, maybe a little more talented, a little more athletic, whatever, with those picks or to trade up this year?
It's always tempting for me. I think, when you're sitting at 29 and watching those kind of players come off the board that you're, you know, that you've spent so much time studying and kind of thinking about how they could affect your football team, it's always tempting. I think it's, you got to be careful and you got to be careful not to fall in love with any individual player, but we'll look at each opportunity we have to move up. We've done that in the past. We've moved down in the past as well, but we'll look at each opportunity. And if it makes sense, we certainly won't be afraid to do that.
With how little you've been able to add in free agency, does that alter the way that you look at it and maybe be a little bit more likely to target a need to with where your situation is as a team right now, or is it just like any other year?
I think it's, you know, maybe slightly alters it, Ryan. I do, again, I'll go back to, I think we kind of did, you know, add a lot to our football team in free agency with the guys we re-signed, but I do think it probably alters it slightly. And maybe gives a little bit more weight to the guys that could help us in the right now. But that's a little bit of a risky, you know, game because you really don't know, you know, until you get them here, until you get them in your system and you see how they adapt to what Matt and the coaches are trying to do with them. You really don't know. So, it has an impact, but I think it's pretty slight.
Hey, Brian, you've talked a number of times over the years about how everything you guys do in personnel is rooted in what Ron brought to Green Bay all those years ago. There's clear positions where you guys have obviously some kind of system that works, whether it's second and third round wide receivers, whether it's, you know, your fourth, fifth, sixth round linemen. There's lots of hits there. There are other positions where there are not so many hits. Do you go back ever, like in the offseason, say when you're talking to your scouts and maybe having these draft meetings where you refine that process and kind of retool what it is you're looking at threshold wise, athletic testing wise, to maybe try and up that hit rate?
Yeah, absolutely. All the time. We self scout, you know, we like to take, you know, usually that month of May and June and really spend some time, not just on the previous year, but we'll go back you know, 3, 10, 15 years at times in drafts and just kind of look at a lot of different things, not only how us as the Green Bay Packers have operated and how our boards have held up, you know, against time, but then also just the trends in the National Football League. The game does change a little bit. There's part of it, you know, the blocking, the tackling, the physicality of it that always stays the same. But I do think the game does change, and you're always looking to see if how that affects our organization and our football team. Also, just, you know, where we play and the weather that we play outdoors and the comfort, you know, the division we play in. And there's just you look at a lot of different things, and you take all that into account and, you know, just try to get better.
Ryan, just because we haven't talked to you in a while, can you explain how you guys came to the – well, not the specifics, obviously, but why you guys wanted to bring Kevin King back in and what you think he can give you guys still if he stays healthy?
Yeah, I think as – you know, I think I talked a little bit about it the last time I talked, but I think that certainly as we finished the, 2020 season heading into this offseason, that wasn't something that I thought was going to be a great possibility to bring Kevin back. But as kind of the pandemic affected the market a little bit, I think we were able, to get him back, and I was super pleased with it. I mean, he obviously Kevin's had his ups and downs with his injury history here, but he's played a lot of good ball for us. And we're better with him on the field than we would be without him.
Brian, I realize shadow boxing with Aaron Rodgers is not totally indicative of somebody's health status, but what's your understanding of where Dave is right now, and what kind of impact does his injury have on this weekend?
Yeah, I think, I haven't seen Dave in probably about, 3 weeks to a month, but I know all the reports are fantastic. I know when he left here, he was way ahead of schedule, and we're certainly – you know, we have a lot of confidence in David and the way he takes care of his body, the way he works, how important it is to him, what a professional he is, that he's going to, he's going to be on target with all that stuff. At the same time, he's such an important part of our football team that we will be, that's a very important part of what we're trying to do. So I don't think it'll impact this particular draft, but he's obviously an impactful person. So not having him out there will certainly, isn't good for us. So we're gonna make sure we do the right thing as we go through his rehab and protect him a little bit from himself, because he's a grinder and he's gonna push himself as hard as he can to get back. But everything that I've heard is positive.
Real quick, would you be shocked if he were ready to play in the opener?
Nothing would shock me with him. He's a unique individual. He's different than most, just with how he attacks things, his mentality. And so nothing would shock me with David.
Hey, Goody, when we used to do these with Ted, they were kind of a fun cat and mouse game, trying to get him to say something of significance. But one of my favorites was, I don't know if it was 06 or 07, but I asked him about how need factored in. And he like stepped away from the podium and he went to the back of the wall and like was trying to explain how what's on the left side and what goes over the top and rounds and positions. And it wasn't great for people doing broadcast media, but it was really informative.
Yeah.
I'm wondering, and he was explaining that need was kind of a tiebreaker for him, that if right. he had two guys that were graded the same, that would break the tie. How has need kind of evolved in how you view it? And then you've also been really aggressive and not afraid to go up, and other guys, including Ted, used to say, you got to let the board come to you. So how has that philosophy developed too?
Yeah, I think Ted's right. I think need really does play a bigger part when it's, you kind of have equal valued players and you're trying to decide. But at the same time, I don't know if it's necessarily evolved, but I think it's the state of your football team and what you feel you have. I mean, there are times, and I don't know if I've really been in that situation very often, but there are times where you feel like to play a game that week or, coming up, you don't feel like you could do it because you're missing a certain piece. I think we're fortunate that we don't feel that way right now. We feel we could go play. We have a very good football team coming back, which gives us me a little more freedom, I think, as we attack the board to go with the best player. But I think at the same time, I think, for me, the one thing that if we have a chance to move up to take a specific player that we feel is special, I think you have to always – consider that. And I think we have since I've been, kind of the last 3 years, I think we've done that and we will always kind of do that. There's only so many game changing type players in this league. And if you have the opportunity to acquire one, I think you have to consider it.
Hey, Brian, it's been 3 years now since your first draft as general manager. Any part of that process, that first class from, you know, the very early stages of scouting to the actual night of the draft, what have you learned or changed in your approach since then?
I think I'd like to think we've constantly evolved and technology has become a little bit more part of it. I think there's just a confidence I think you take from going, you know, multiple drafts and understanding how it's going to play out. And until you kind of sit in that chair the first time, it's, even though I had been in draft rooms, you know, dozens of times, it's different when, you know, the entire room's looking at you to make the decision. So I think there's a comfort level after you've done it a few years and moving up and down the board and making trades where you just, it just puts you at ease. So I think that's part of it. I think our group as a whole has kind of, you know, just, we've all been together for a while now. And I think that experience really pays off.
All right. That's it. Thank you.
Thank you, guys.
I guess how difficult is it to know what maybe you're really getting in a player who opted out of the entire 2020 season and hasn't played a game since 2019? How do you look at that?
Yeah, I think it's a case by case, Mike. I think each individual that opted out of the 2020 season, I think we spent a lot of time this spring on why, what the reasonings were for them. And really it's interesting, obviously the different conferences and the way they handled the pandemic and how they approached their seasons is an important factor. I think the West Coast and the Big Ten maybe have, you know, canceled their seasons at one point, and a lot of players made decisions at that point that were pretty tough to come back from once they decided to have a season, where the SEC and the ACC, you know, I think they never got to that point where they canceled their season. So some guys had, you know, family matters and people who had significant health risks. And so we go through each individual and kind of figure out why they opted out. But then there's guys that, you know, played half the season and opted out at the end because they've got advice from their coaches. And there's just a ton of different reasons. So we go through those each one. And the way we look at it kind of depends on that.